Say it is very good to see each and every one of you. I'm glad to see you. We've got a good number here this morning. I'm glad everybody's got the health and ability to be out this morning. In Reuben's series of his lessons, he made a fairly quick remark one night, but it caught my attention. And I said, hey, you know, I need to check into that. And what he was talking about was perfect. You know, in his lesson, he was saying that, you know, the Greek would be the ideal, like they would use the term as in, like, say, building a machine, and you would put the final gear into place, and it's perfect. That's the word that was used there would be what is translated perfect. So I got to thinking about that because, you know, just a lot of different verses uses that word perfect. And, you know, this would be a lot like one of those word study lessons I did, say, 3 years ago. You know, I talked about four or five words that would be misunderstood or misused, you know, say, by the religious world as a whole. But I think this is one that even I have not fully understood correctly in the use of it. So what I want to do is I want to look, you know, first off at our modern day version of this word and how we use it, and then look at the actual Greek, and there's quite a few words all translated to one for us today. And I'm not going to look at every single word. I've just got the numbers up there this morning. But I want us to look at the way it was used, and then we're going to look at some verses and situations that go with that, so we have a great understanding of exactly how it works. Hopefully it'll be a good lesson for you. I've enjoyed the study of it. So perfect. Our modern day version, you take and look it up on, you know, dictionary.com or Webster's, you know, whatever, you know, dictionary, you take and look it up. These are the ones that pop up. You know, it can be used as an adjective. It can be used as a verb. But it says having all the required or desirable elements, qualities, or characteristics as good as it is possible to be. You know, and, you know, it's a lot of the ways we think of that, the ideal of perfect, as in you're absolutely the best you could possibly be. Another one is make completely free from faults or defects, or as close to such a condition as possible. You know, so when we start thinking perfect and a lot of the ways it's used, it really doesn't fit so well. And the ideal of being as good as it can be, no faults, no defects, you know, free from all of these things. You know, just let's look at a couple of verses and see, you know, if that would fit. You know, Matthew 5:48, Jesus speaking there on the Sermon on the Mount, you know, we've got apostles that are there. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. So we can look at the end of that and say, okay, that perfect fits God perfectly. He is perfect in every way possible. No defects, no faults, no wrongs, no anything. You're perfect. You know, with our, you know, definition for today. And then you think, though, a lot of the individuals that he's speaking to, though, were they perfect? Were they without fault, without defect? I know Peter was there. Even after Jesus died and Peter started preaching, Paul had to get on to Peter for being in the wrong. You know, so Peter wasn't perfect. How about all the denying that he did, denied Jesus three times? How about the lack of faith when he walked on the water? You think about Peter, you're thinking, you know, Peter couldn't be perfect, but Jesus says, be ye therefore perfect. You know, and you think, well, that, you know, is there a conflict with that word? How about 2 Corinthians 13:11? Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you. You know, that's pretty tough, right? Paul says, farewell. You know, this is coming to the end of his second letter. May not ever get back to see him. And then he tells them, be perfect. Wow, that's pretty rough, right? You know, be without any fault, any wrong. You know, you be perfect. You know, and you're thinking, you know, does that fit? You know, think about the whole 1 Corinthians letter. And I mean, he's talking about divisions and all the sin that's among them and everything. You know, there's no way you could take and look at our definition and say perfect, no faults, nothing, because that congregation had a lot of faults, a lot of problems that they were working through. And even with the second letter, he writes them and he's telling some of them, yeah, you've done great on some of these things, And then he tells them that you still got some things to fix on some of these as well. So when you look at it that way, you're like, are they fitting that word perfect? And then here I think is another one that to me really makes sense. Talking about Christ himself, Hebrews 5:9. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Jesus never sinned. I mean, what wasn't he perfect in every aspect of his life on this earth? But it talks about becoming the author of eternal salvation and being made perfect. And you're thinking, well, how he was perfect, how does he get made perfect? Well, it's really because of the definition and how we use perfect. Here's a list of numbers. There's 10 of them there. 10 separate words in the Greek that's translated perfect. That's a whole lot to sort of lump into one word, isn't it? I mean, we start, you know, thinking about how things could fit. You know, every bit of those is all put in as perfect. And then take our word perfect today. You know, the idea of lacking nothing, no faults, no problems, no issues. But if you look at every one of these, and I've just got, you know, these chunks of definitions, each one of them. Completeness in character, full age. To complete, finish, fulfill. Level up, like you know, bring up to the top of something. Finish, full, complete, end of. Like you've got to the end of. It's perfect, it's complete. Physical wholeness, perfect soundness, complete thoroughly. Men, make perfect, restore. Finish, complete, fulfill, complete, exactly, more exact or exactness. And notice those are like 199, 197, 195. Those are like tense verbs, tenses of it, you know, that kind of thing. Like a root word and then building off the root word. But notice in there, you know, the word perfect was used on that 2675. And I didn't write the words out for every one of these. It would take like three pages or three slides of the lesson to do that, like full word. And then, you know, I'd mispronounce all of them. You know I would. But you know, make perfect is there on 2675. So you're thinking, okay, so that's translated back to our word perfect, as in without fault or defect. You know, it talks about making something like in its, you know, true state. In that case, you know, without tears or rips. Notice the word mend or restore is there with it, like taking it back to the original. All right, and there is some importantness with that. The ideal of taking back to the original state, or the ideal of missing and needing to complete, or filling up or finishing, coming to the end of. You know, all of these words, they go together so well. But notice the ideal of perfectness, like our use of it, it's not really there. You know, the ideal, no faults, no mistakes, no imperfections ever, that's not really in that. We're going to look at some verses and see how, you know, this word perfect is translated for one of these words, and how if we took the perfect, it doesn't even fit really the context. So first off, the verse Matthew 19 and 21. And if you want to go ahead and turn there, we are going to read a bigger chunk of that. Matthew 19 and verse 21 is where I want to pull the word, though. All right, it says, Jesus said unto him, if thou wilt be perfect, go and sell that thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. So notice the word there, you know, perfect. It says, if thou wilt be perfect. All right, so, you know, if you take and go back to the today's definition, if you will be without any fault, any problems, any troubles, anything, you know, perfect, you know, without defect in any way, if thou wilt be perfect, you know, that doesn't fit too well. But let's take and read a little bit more of the whole context here. So Matthew 19, 16 through 22. Matthew 19, 16 through 22. Now behold, one came and said to him, good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? So he said unto him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. He said to him, which ones? Jesus says, you shall not commit murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and your mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to him, all these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack? So he said, what am I missing? Okay. Jesus said unto him, if you want to be perfect. So, you know, he's answering the question. Go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. And when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. We all know this story, right? The rich young ruler. But I'm looking at this word perfect in here. Notice, you know, the rich young ruler asked the question, what lack I yet? What am I missing? You know, I'm missing something. I know I'm missing something. I want to know what it takes to take and get into heaven to be faithful. What am I missing? And then that word perfect that Jesus is using, you know, he tells him, you know, exactly what he's missing. All right? You know, that's what he goes to tell him here. If you will be perfect, if you want to fix what you're missing, in other words, you know, that doesn't mean that the man, you know, never had any wrongs, never had any defects. He actually tells him that there is something that's in his way. There is a defect here. There is a problem here. You know, he loves money more than he loves being faithful. I mean, that's really what's there. He covets that money. So he's not saying, you know, if you want to be perfect, as in never had a fault, never had a wrong, because he does have wrongs, and he probably will commit more wrongs. We know this. But what he has given him is this condition, if thou wilt be perfect. All right, the idea that what's to come, it's still in the future, so it can't be perfect, has no defects, no problems, excuse me, because it's still to come, for one. It's in the future tense, will be. But what he is telling him, though, is if you want to be complete. Notice if we actually look at the use of the word that's there, the perfect. What am I lacking? And he says, okay, you know, you understand there's something missing in your life. You understand that you are not what you should be. I'm going to tell you what it takes to complete you, to fix that problem. So that word perfect isn't as in never had a fault or never will have a fault perfect. No, it's the ideal of you are missing something. Let me tell you what it takes to fix that, to make you complete and whole. It makes a little better sense than the ideal of being perfect in our sense, doesn't it? Acts 22 and 3, Paul speaking here, he says, I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward God as ye all are this day. Well, first off, we know that the old law was not perfect. It could not remove sins. All right, that's why a new law had to come. But notice even he says the manner of the law of the fathers. The law of the fathers was those we've been talking about even on Wednesday night in our Bible class. Those things that the fathers, the forefathers, had wrote out and said, okay, you know, he says this, but, you know, for us to make sure we're under that, we're going to add all of these other stipulations. That's the manner of the law of the fathers. So, yeah, there was the old law. Then there's the law of the fathers. That would be the law that he's talking about that he was taught. So, you know, the ideal of perfect manner. And you're thinking, well, if that was perfect, why does Jesus condemn them for holding all these laws and even some laws that went against the law of God? The ideal of not taking care of your father and your mother, not showing honor to them if you promised the money that you would use to take care of them to the temple. You know, they would let that happen. And he's condemning them for that thing. Or how about some of the things that the Pharisees did? You know, the lesson we looked at last week, condemning them, you know, how is their way perfect? As in no fault, no defect, nothing. It's not. It's not the way it's being used there. We'll come back to that. So let's look at some verses on the ideal of that not being perfect. Hebrews 7:19, for the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did, by the which we draw nigh unto God. Talking about the new covenant, the new law that we're in. It is perfect. All right? Hebrews 10:1, for the law having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers, those that did those things, thereunto perfect. So it couldn't take care of what needed to be done. It was imperfect. All right? James 1:25, but whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, talking about the new law, perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds. So see there, the new law is perfect. But in both cases, it talks about the old law as being imperfect. All right? And then, like I said, all the manner of the fathers, that was definitely imperfect. So what Paul is saying when he uses the word perfect here, it's talking about he was taught the complete law. He was brought up at the feet of Gamaliel and fully filled in on every detail of the old law, the fathers' forefathers' laws, all of those details of how he could stand as a faithful Pharisee is what he's making a point thereof. So perfect isn't that it was perfect as in no fault, no defect, no wrongs with the way he was taught and the way he acted, but in the complete manner of. Hebrews 5 and verse 9. And being made perfect, you know, we talked about this with Jesus, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Again, Jesus was perfect. He had no fault. He had no defect. He had no wrong in his life. Would he not be truly the way we use the word perfect? Yes. Yes, he would. And then we got the word, though, and being made perfect. All right, so Jesus was sinless. You know, but salvation did not come until he finished what he was sent to do. Like John 17:4, you know, they're praying, you know, unto the Father, talking about leaving, you know, everyone behind and getting ready to be sacrificed. I have glorified thee on the earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. This ideal of being made perfect is the ideal that he fully completed the mission that he had when he come down to this earth. He came down, the Father sent him to teach, to preach, to be that perfect example, and then to lay down his life as that perfect sacrifice for all of mankind. And being made perfect means when he has completed everything. Yes, the man was truly perfect. Being made perfect means that he completed everything that he came to do. Nobody stopped him. Mankind couldn't stop him. Mankind couldn't stand in his way. Satan couldn't stop him. He couldn't trick him. Matthew 4, you know, he tried other times. Nothing stopped him. Jesus fully completed his work. He was made perfect in that. Again, we got a, seems like a conflict there if we're looking at two different words, right? Ephesians 4, verse 13. Till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Notice there the ideal of being able to get to a position of being a perfect man, a perfect individual. All right? Notice that it brought up the knowledge of the Son of God. Knowledge itself does not make us faultless. We can know to do good and not do it. We know that something's wrong and still do it. Knowledge itself doesn't do it, but knowledge will lead us in the ability to learn, to keep from making mistakes, to keep from falling apart, to keep from having faults, to keep from having, you know, wrong in our life. But just the knowledge itself will not keep us from making a mistake, or say we never ever will make another mistake, you know. But it will make us complete and whole, because we know exactly what the Lord expects of us. Now there's more to this. We need to understand, because some would start saying, well, preacher, you're sort of acting like we can live an imperfect life and be acceptable to God. In some ways, that's true. But to be acceptable in Him's sight and Him say, well done, thy good and faithful servant, there is another aspect to this I'm getting to, the ideal of being complete, and I brought it up within the words. All right? But the ideal of being without fault ever, without defect ever, without ever having made a wrong, that's not what's there. That's not perfect. We can be perfect and have wrongs in our life. All right? But this ideal of the knowledge of the Son of God and being able to become a perfect man, yeah, we have this knowledge. We study, we learn, we understand Jesus was sent down on this earth for us. We understand His blood was shed for us. We understand what's right and wrong. We understand what's expected of us so that we can follow through on that. And that's why it says, unto a perfect man. So I've kept that little, you know, 3 points right here in the middle of this. Notice 2 Timothy 3:17, that the man of God may be perfect, as in complete, thoroughly furnished unto all good work. So everything that was done on our behalf was so that we can be complete. All right, that means we have complete knowledge of who we are, why we're here, and what's in store for us in the future. That's why it says thoroughly or completely furnished. Everything we need to stand before God and hear, "Well done, thy good and faithful servant," has been given unto us. We can be complete and whole. Hebrews 12:23. To the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. Again, man has been made complete. Where we're given the ability to take and have our faults, our defects, our wrongs removed from us so that we can stand whole in the sight of God. But that doesn't mean that we could never, ever have a wrong and be found unacceptable. Hebrews 13:21. Make you perfect in every good work to do His will, working in you that which is well-pleasing in His sight, through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. Everything that we could possibly need, we have been given so we can be complete in our work. You know, this world is a whole. When you start talking about different religions and what this group does and what that group does and different things, and you know, there's all these different things as part of their work. You know, there's difference between good work and work. There's a lot of people that do work for God, but it's not God's good work that He has set up. All right, now we have been given everything. We are complete in the knowledge and instruction of what is that good work God has given us to do. Now, mankind chooses to do other work in His name. But notice that Hebrews 13:21, the ideal of being perfect is that everything we need to know what to do is being given to us. Now, we still got to do it. You know, there is that conflict between being perfect or, you know, make you perfect in that and actually being complete and whole in that. 1 Peter 5:10. But the God of all grace, who hath called us unto His eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, so complete, put you all together, give you everything that you need, establish, that means to set you up. All right, that's what establish means, or establish means. All right, so he's done everything to make us whole, complete. He has set us up. He has strengthened us. So the ideal of here's what you need to do. You know, I've got the place, the time, everything. You've got everything you need. And then strengthen us in that work and then settles you. As in, get it done. You know, everything is in place. I've given it to you. You just have to do your part now. And He strengthens us in that work. We're grounded in that work if we're going to be a part of that work. So notice all of this perfectness that's coming up, this wholeness, this completeness, it is still that conditional statement if we go all the way back. We can be complete. Now that doesn't mean that we've never had a fault or a defect ever in our life, or that we may not still have one that happens in our life. But the Lord has made it where we can be whole and complete and stay in that condition. Some more verses. Matthew 5:48. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. All right, so the ideal of being complete, holy, acceptable, just as our Father which is in heaven is perfect. We have the ability to be that perfect, that full, complete, whole, holy, just like Him. We have that ability. And we still have had faults and defects in our life. But it's the ideal that the path or way has been made to remove that from us. It's the ideal, if we go to Revelation, we start talking about the garments of the saints were white. You know, this language that was used. The ideal that there's no spots, there's no blemishes. You know, I don't wear white shirts. Y'all ever seen me wear a white shirt? Ever, if you think about it? There's a good reason for that. I can't keep a shirt white. It just does not happen. You know, they don't make bleach good enough to keep a shirt white with me. I bought a white shirt one time. I wore it to one Sunday morning lesson. Had my nice, pretty tie on. And I was driving back from service in a beautiful day. And I said, I'm going to roll the windows down. It's such a beautiful day. I was driving down the road in a bumblebee. Come in the window. It went under my tie. And suicide bomb. Boom, blew up all over my white shirt. I mean, it blew up. Destroyed that white shirt. And I'm like, last white shirt I ever buy right there. And it has been. I've got some old raggedy t-shirts and stuff. But That's what they're meant for. But I don't wear white shirts because I can't keep them clean. You know, and that's the ideal in Revelation, there, that garment, you know, that the Lord had made a way for all of those, like that big bumblebee spot, it could all come out. It could all be removed and we could stand whole in His sight. John 17:23, I in them, thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one. Talking about whole or complete in one. Talking about His body. That all of those that would be faithful could come together and be one. You know, it says, and that the world may know that thou hast sent me and hath loved them as thou hast loved me. And it's talking about, you know, he and them and them and, you know, and all of us together, that we can be unified, made whole and complete in one body. But if we're not part of that body, we're not perfect, we're not complete, we're not whole. We're outside of that. We're not acceptable. Romans 12:2, this is one that comes up quite often, right? We read it here just the other night. Says, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So in that case, you could think, okay, well, the will of God is perfect. It is. So you could take the word either way in this. But it's talking about us being able to prove by our life that the will of God is complete, it's whole, it's exactly what man needed. That's why Jesus came down and died. Because God understood what man needed. He made us. He created us. We left Him. We sinned. He knew exactly what it would take to make us whole once again, to be acceptable in His sight. And He made that happen. Let's talk about the ideal of being complete. What makes anyone complete when it comes to the will of God? The first thing that hopefully you've picked up throughout this is coming to the knowledge of God, hearing. Without hearing and learning of God in every aspect of what it has taken, you know, to make us whole, there's no way to be whole. You don't have the knowledge to be whole, to be complete. You've got to learn of everything that's been done on your behalf. And then the second half of that, after you've learned, you've listened, you've studied, you've figured out what God has done, the whole aspect of from the beginning of time till now, the workings that He has put in place for you, then you got to accept. You got to accept who you are. You got to accept that I have sinned. I have fell short of the glory of God. You got to accept that. Till you accept that, you can never be whole either. Because until you've decided that you have committed wrong, you cannot be fixed. That's like the young, rich young ruler. He knew he was missing something. What am I missing? The Lord told him. He heard it, right? Did he believe it? Yeah, he believed he needed to do it, but he didn't act on it. But we have to believe, okay, I have done wrong. The Lord has made a way for me to remove that wrong. I have to believe in it enough to make that change. And that's the next part there, that change. We've got to change our wrongful ways. You know, we've got to say, okay, if I'm going to be complete and whole in His sight, I've got to remove those defects. I've got to remove those faults. I've got to leave them somewhere else. They cannot stay a part of me. As long as they are a part of me, I can never be whole. I can never be complete. I cannot be perfect. So we got to repent. We got to change from those things. And then throughout all the reading, if you notice over and over and over, was the ideal of obedience. You heard it. You believe it. You know you're going to change. You're making that change. And then you obey. You confess and you're baptized. That's just them starting steps of obedience. I know what's been done on my behalf. I'm going to act on those. And you got to continue to living an obedient life all the way till death. That's the only way we can stay in this ideal of being complete and whole. Faithful unto death. And then we can be received back to the Father that created us. I made an extra point there when I was reading through those different Greek words, you know, the numbers for the Greek words. The ideal of mending, repairing, putting back to like original state. Yeah, when we came into this world, when we were born, we took that first breath. We let out that big squall right when that nurse slapped us on the bottom. We were complete. We were perfect. We came into this world in a perfect, complete state. But as we go through life, we have faults. We have blemishes. we create these things in our life. But when we go through all of this that the Lord has put in place, when he became perfect, as in he completed the work of God, we have all of those big holes in our life filled in and fixed. And we stand complete in his sight. Then truly, we have actually completed our purpose in this life and are perfect. We need to understand God created man to serve him. As long as we have sin in our life, we're serving ourselves. One way, shape, or form or another, we are serving ourselves. But when we make ourselves whole and complete, and we live that to the end of our life, we have fulfilled our purpose. Truly, we are complete and perfect. In conclusion, if we never had any faults and were perfect according to the current definition of today's time, then why did Christ ever have to come down and suffer and die? Wouldn't it all have been just useless? I mean, if we could say, okay, I'm a perfect man, I've never had any wrong ever, then why did Christ have to come and die for me? It says all men have sinned and fell short of the glory of God. That's every single person ever. We have all sinned and fell short of the glory of God. So there's no way that we can hold the definition of perfect as being without fault, without blemish, ever. That's not there. Now, it is the ideal of not living with those holes, those defects, those blemishes, but removing those things when we have them or have created them. Sin makes us incomplete. It makes us unacceptable. Think about it, like if you went and bought this shirt and there was a big old hole right here in the chest. Would you want to say that's my shirt and buy it and I'm going to wear it? No, you wouldn't. Same thing with us. You know, we take and we live our life, and then we die, we go to the Lord, and the Lord looks at you and he's like, you're full of holes, you're full of defects, you're full of wrong. You're not mine. Depart from me. I never knew you. Sin makes us unacceptable, incomplete to the Lord. It separates us from him. You know, he'll say, I never knew you. Depart from me. Why? Because he is holy. And yes, we must strive to be like him. We need every single day of our life look at ourselves and say, just like that rich young ruler, what lack I yet? And fix that. Work on that every single day of our life. And when we find those big holes and blemishes, ask the Lord to forgive us. Make that right with him so we can stand complete and whole in his sight. Yeah, we're not perfect as in today's current definition, but we can be perfect and complete according to the biblical definition. Christ died for us to be complete such as that. His blood, the gaining of knowledge of why he had to shed his blood, the acceptance and obedience to all that he has put in place will make us whole and complete. Then we're going to be able to stand before him complete and perfect and hear him say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Today, we would like to see each and every one of you complete and whole. Those that have never obeyed the gospel understand that at this moment, you are separated from the Lord. Until you take the steps of becoming whole, you are not his. Or maybe you've obeyed the gospel and you've turned back unto other things. Just like our good brother this morning, repent of those things. Confess your faults, ask forgiveness, come back to him. Stand whole in his sight once more. This morning we're happy to help. If you'll come forward, as together we stand and sing.
I have decided to fall.